next case this morning, which is NRA AR Associate Accessories Group.
I may be dead of depression before this day is done.
This is a change of pace.
Thank God. I never thought I'd say thank God for a leading case.
Morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Richard E. Brown. I'm appearing for the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. The department filed a wage lien to collect pre-bankruptcy wages owed over 300 former employees of AR Accessories Group, Inc. AR Accessories is the debtor in the related bankruptcy case. The lenders claim the wage lien, the lenders are the appellees, claim the wage lien is unenforceable for two reasons. First, the department violated the bankruptcy automatic stay when it perfected its wage lien post-petition. Secondly, the department had no pre-petition interest in the property against which it ultimately perfected the wage lien. I'd like to quickly address the second issue before dealing with the first. The department's position is that the lien is created under the statute when there are unpaid wages due and owing. The parties agree that there are pre-petition wages due and owing. They don't agree on the amount, but they agree that there are some. So it is the department's position that it did have a lien, albeit unperfected, before the bankruptcy petition was filed. And under Bankruptcy Code Section 101, Sub 37, a lien is defined to include an interest in property. The bankruptcy judge, Judge Shapiro, I believe you can tell from his opinion, certainly from the argument, that this was the most important issue to him. And he analyzed the wage lien statute all the way back from its inception, every amendment, the effect of the NAFCO cases, the critical 1993 amendments to the statute, all the way up to the Pfister decision in 1998. Judge Shapiro found that the lien indeed was created pre-petition when the last pre-petition wages were performed for which money was owed. His reasons are cogently set forth in his decision. We've transferred those into our briefs. We've tried to expand or explain them, although that was difficult to do because he did thoroughly analyze them. The point here is that Judge Randa never reached that question, and so to some extent that is still the law of the case. We understand that the appellees can raise that issue before this court and that this court certainly has the authority to reverse Judge Shapiro, but as it stands right now, the pre-petition interest the state is claiming is in fact that it holds a wage lien, recognizing that it's unperfected. That gets us to the first issue, or the other issue, the stay order violation. There are exceptions to the stay order. Stay order doesn't stop everything.
Mm-hmm.
362B3 is the exception that applies here. It allows the post-petition perfection of certain types of liens. It throws you into 546 B1A, which I'm going to simply refer to as 546B.
Now, excuse me, but your interpretation wouldn't stay active perfection that undoubtedly occur post-petition and for which state law didn't create a legal fiction, right?
I'm sorry, Aaron, I guess I'm
okay, I guess, all right. Under the lender's approach,
yes.
Aren't all acts of perfection stayed except those that actually occurred before the date the petition was filed or that occurred before the date the petition was filed through a legal fiction created by state law which related the act, back to a pre-petition date?
The lenders, I believe, What the code says is that you can perfect post-petition as long as you've got a pre-petition lien. The lender's argument is that the actual lien statute must contain express language that relates the perfection back to a specific pre-petition date.
So, in other words, am I wrong when I think that your interpretation wouldn't stay acts of perfection that occurred post-petition if the state law doesn't create the legal fiction?
My position is that if the state law, if the legal fiction the court's talking about is the priming lien, the retroactive effect, or the super priority lien, I distinguish between those two, then yes, that's true. Without that, we would not prevail in this.
And wouldn't that be removed then from the timeline approach of the automatic stay provision?
Removed?
Yeah.
I don't understand, Judge.
No. Maybe I don't know.
I'm sorry. Maybe it'll become clear when I keep going here.
It just seems to me that the lender's position is more consistent with the timeline approach of the stay by recognizing an exception only when state law changes the effective date of the act of the perfection so that it's prior to the date of filing.
And that's what essentially the Wisconsin statute does. They're saying the statute has to expressly state that. We're saying that all 546B requires is that it have that effect so that a super priority lien or a priority lien, a priming lien, that can relate back has that effect.
So you're saying it's not a fiction?
But it is a fiction.
Oh.
It is a fiction, but it exists in Wisconsin law. It's a fiction in the sense...
A fiction can't exist by definition. It's an oxymoron.
Well, the Microfab quote called it a legal fiction, Your Honor, and I thought that's what you were referring to.
No.
Logically, the court is obviously impeccably correct.
Fiction means that. It's that true.
Yes.
Wisconsin deals in fictions, is what you're saying.
Oh, we all deal with
fictions. I would not say that, Your Honor. Please, don't do that. If the Wisconsin wage lien meets the requirements of 546B, it allows the post-petition perfection of the wage lien that existed pre-petition. There is no violation of the stay order, and we have a valid lien. So what does 546 require? It simply requires that the lien-creating statute must allow perfection of an interest in property to be effective against an entity that acquires rights in the property before the date of perfection. More simply put, as it relates to this case, the state's wage lien must be able to defeat the lender's liens, even though they were previously filed. Does it? Yes, the statute says that it does. It says that the wage lien takes precedence over all other debts, judgments, decrees, liens, or mortgages. Any doubt about the validity or the meaning of that language was settled in Pfister, the 1998 Wisconsin Court of Appeals case, which held the lien is indeed valid against numerous challenges, including constitutional ones, and that in terms of the priority language, all means all. And even though the wage lien in that case was filed after the lender's liens were perfected, the employee won.
You're in your rebuttal time, you know.
Pardon?
You're in your rebuttal time.
All right, Your Honor. I changed the timing so that I have 7 minutes on out of the 10. Okay. Let me skip then quickly to we've detailed the authority. There are two circuits that have clearly weighed in on this, the first and the second. They've held that the statute 546B is not ambiguous. It does not require the lien-creating statute to have relation back language in it. The lead, well, let me save that for rebuttal. I'll sit down now. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Metz?
Good morning. My name is Mark Metz. I represent Bank One, who is one of the appellees in this matter. I'd like to just focus on three specific points. The first one, most critical, is that there is a real difference between a lien that relates back to an earlier time and a lien that has super priority. These are not two different ways of saying the same thing, and the concept should not be collapsed into one.
Can we start, please, with Mr. Braun's first, last point? Because you argue that the First and Fourth Circuit's understanding of the term interest in property is overbroad and ill-defined. But given that Congress chose to use that term rather than the term lien, don't you have to concede that that is broader than the term lien?
An interest in property is definitely broader than a lien. Examples of other interests of property are ownership interest, that's not a lien, or a possessory interest, as well as liens.
Well, do me a favor and define interest in property in relation to the concept of lien.
Well, a lien is a subset of the universe of interest in property that one might have. One might own the property, one might possess the property, one might have a tenancy in the property, one might have a lien on the property. And for purposes of Section 546, they use the word, the phrase interest in property to take into account things like somebody who's received a deed, has purchased a house, but hasn't recorded the deed yet, would have to perfect their interest, which is different than perfecting a lien.
It seems to me that the statute requires only an interest in debtor's property, and that at least appears to exist here. And I mean, if
a pre-petition interest in the debtor's property, I don't think, other than Judge Shapiro reading back into the statute language that was deleted as part of an amendment, there is no reference in the statute anywhere to when the lien arises, other than the first reference to the lien is that it is effective when an employee files a claim. Later on, it talks about the department exercising its rights to look out for employees can do the same. But there is no reference in the statute to the department having sort of an omnipresent lien on all of the debtor's property. It would really be eternally effective, because unless the debtor, any company, prepays its employees, there are always going to be unpaid wages. And a statute doesn't get you there. But in any, you know, even if there were pre-petition interest in the property by the department, although you can't tell when it arose, not by reading the statute, only by putting back in words that were deleted, that's not the sort of lien that is accepted from the automatic stay. A lien that relates back is effective as of an earlier date. There's the legal fiction, so that any intervening activity on that property, it could be a new lien, it could be a sale of the property, anything else that happens on that property is subject to this lien, which by legal fiction already exists on the property. In contrast, a super priority lien doesn't use that legal fiction, doesn't try to apply rights as of an earlier date. It simply takes priority over all other interests that exist on the date that lien is perfected. And if in the meantime, between when the lien arose and when it was perfected, the property has been sold, a super priority lien creditor doesn't have a lien on anything, unlike a creditor whose lien had retroactive effect. We tried in our brief, you know, it's admittedly a subtle distinction, and we tried to use the analogy of a creditor queue, and we hope that the illustration of waiting in line is helpful to understand the difference between liens that relate back and those having super priority. A creditor with the right to perfect a lien that relates back is like a person who arrived at a particular time, saved a place in line, and left. If that person returns, which would be if they subsequently take the acts necessary to perfect They've got their place in line. They go back.
So I'd be completely wrong if I thought that the bankruptcy court correctly concluded that the lien was created prior to the filing of the bankruptcy petition? Or am I mixing apples and oranges?
No. I think the bankruptcy court erred in concluding that the lien existed prior to the bankruptcy petition. The court, Judge Shapiro looked around trying to find an earlier date, something other than the filing of the lien petition or the filing of a claim by an employee, because all of that happened post-petition.
Yeah.
He was struggling to find some date. There was none mentioned in the statute. There used to be a date in the statute, and that was the last date for which services were performed and paid. That was deleted. And he went back to that and concluded that the deletion was not meant to affect substantive rights. So there is nothing in the present version of the statute that would give any guidance to this court or to a bankruptcy court about when the department first had a lien, so that there might be something for their lien to relate back to.
Yeah, but of course the First and Second Circuits, you know, rejected that viewpoint that would mandate specific language. You know, specific relation back language.
And the Third Circuit has endorsed it.
So we now have 1, 2, and 3.
Right, and we skipped 4, 5, 6, we're going right to 7.
And you came right to 5.
Back to the credit line analogy, a super priority creditor can show up any time and march to the front of the line. And that's different than having saved your place in line. And that distinction has been recognized by the Wisconsin legislature. They create liens for some creditors that relate back. Mechanics liens is an example. They create liens for some creditors that have super priority. And in the case of property taxes, they create a lien that has both attributes.
And you want to create a circuit split.
I think one exists already between 1, 2, and 3. The other thing is, in those earlier cases, in the First and Second Circuit, there's nothing in the decisions that suggests that they reviewed the legislative history carefully. They said the statute is not ambiguous. One of those decisions precedes the Supreme Court in the Fidelity Financial case, which did, through the use of ellipses, exactly what the department finds untoward when the lenders do it, which is to take the modifier and move it closer to the verb that it modifies. In the Fidelity case, you know, there are two possible verbs that the phrase before the date of perfection might modify. The verb right before it, the nearest antecedent, or a little bit earlier in the sentence, the verb acquire, to be effective. And the Supreme Court, admittedly in dictum, but has said that 546b1 speaks of laws that permit perfection to be effective, ... before the date of perfection. They've eliminated the verb to which the department would like to apply, and move the antecedent of before the date of perfection closer to be effective. And that may or may not be the correct interpretation, but it creates an ambiguity that justifies this court resorting to legislative history, at which point everything becomes very clear. The legislative history talks about the exception applying only if state law creates the type of lien that relates back, not that has the effect of relating back or that is allowed to walk to the head of the line, but that relates back to a specific time. So the other circuit courts did not address the fact that the Supreme Court itself has endorsed one reading. They endorsed a different reading. That's an ambiguity that leads back to the legislative history, which answers the question pretty definitively.
Thank you, Mr. Metz.
Thank you.
Mr. Braun? You have 1 minute, sir.
The statute does tell us when the lien is created. The statute says the department, under its authority to maintain actions for the benefit of employees, shall have a lien. It is when they can maintain the action. When can they maintain the action? They can do that when there are wages unpaid and due and owing. And that can be pre-petition, and that tells us when the lien was created. Makarov does not support the lender's position. In Makarov, it was a pre-petition interest case. It was not a relation back case. That circuit supports the First and Second Circuits. The lien in that case was a tax lien. The lien priority provision said almost exactly what our wage lien says, that the lien shall be superior to any mortgage, judgment, or other lien. It didn't have the relation back language that they want or say that is required. And yet the court in Makarov said if there would have been a pre-petition interest, if the lien had been created pre-petition, as ours has, then they would have won.
Was Mr. Metz talking about Makarov, or was he talking about In Re Alberto?
I think he was talking about Makarov. I think he said Makarov.
Yes, go ahead.
I did not say Makarov. Makarov, again, around the issue, but relied on Lionel, which is the case that from the Third Circuit, which did directly address the issue of relation back.
Thank you.
Okay.
Lionel's a Second Circuit case that follows the state's position.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We move to case number 5.